Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for Friday, January 17th. It's just moments away. It is the 17th, right? Okay, great.
Hold on. Yes.
It's just moments away. But before we get into that, we need to thank the following unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. Unions like the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9. They sponsor this program. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace, Not Aerosmith Workers, Local 126 and District 8 are sponsors, as well as the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. Thank you to those unions for jumping on board, sponsoring this show. And, of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you by our dear friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Ben, let's hear that song of the day.
Tighten up. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Tighten up. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
What?
Archie Bell and Durrells from Houston, Texas. We got a new song called The Tighten Up. 1968D, long before you or Miles were born.
The Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Friday, January 17th. And live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Ben, throw your bagel wrapper away. Today on the program, it's another Ramana Rundown with Sun-Times editor Ramana Hussein. Political strategist Candace Castillo returns. And also making his return, it's our new city council correspondent, the one, the only, Mr. Bike David Glowatz. And now your host, lover of bagels, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this When You're Right, You're Right. And You're Right. Friday. And here's why.
That's correct.
By the way, where's that quote from? Do you know? When you're right, you're right. Chinatown.
I know it's Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, Nicholson. Curly, when you're right, you're right. Now quit. Leave the lavalier blinds alone. Anyway, long story at the beginning of Chinatown. Ugh. All right, folks, I'm going to have to acknowledge a couple things. One is harder than the other. One is actually easy to acknowledge. Facebook, a friend of mine, Babs, his comment on Facebook that he left me, it's easy to acknowledge he's right because he's right. He's really right. We'll get to that first. First one's a little harder. Never thought I would say this. I agree with a planning department chief. Yes. Never thought I'd hear that. Words come out of my mouth. In this very studio, was it yesterday? Maurice Cox, the new planning chief for the city of Chicago, yes. Was in the studio.
Yeah, Fran Spielman's show.
And Fran Spielman and David Roeder were grilling him. And they got into a discussion of big plans. Now, let me just say this as a way of introduction. More often than not, I have been on the opposite side of virtually every development proposal that a planning chief in the city of Chicago has come with down with since the year Mayor Daley was first elected. And that would be Baby Daley, Daley 2, so we're talking 1989. Can't help it, folks. They like to take your property tax dollars and spend it underwriting deals that probably don't need your property tax dollars in the first place, thus enriching their friends, their cronies, their pals, and raising everybody else's taxes.
Oh, so, bastards.
Yeah, that's kind of how things have gone, folks, for the last 30 years. You call it progress and economic development. Both newspapers are in favor, and I'm the one guy in the city of Chicago. No, don't do it. Anyway, yesterday in this studio, as I said, Maurice Cox, I have not had an opportunity to listen to the interview, but today's bright one, home delivered as always, has a story sort of summarizing what Maurice Cox said. And he closes by saying this. He was asked whether he was in favor of big projects like the One Central project that would calls for decking over railroad tracks west of Soldier Field to make way for a wall of high rises built on Transportation Center. Oh, my God. I remember ranting and railing about that one, D. And about the visionary plan to put a cap over the Kennedy Expressway to create more parkland. Cox called both proposals big, audacious projects that are easier, easier proposed than done. Quote, you start talking about billion-dollar TIFFs. Could you imagine what we could do with $1 billion in the South Side just doing 100 little projects? I'm interested in unleashing hundreds of little development projects. They incrementally build those neighborhoods one lot at a time. Our first obligation is to stop the exodus out of Chicago because Chicago needs a strong black middle class. That means we have to pay attention to the neighborhoods where they live. If we tackle this in a comprehensive way instead of a scattershot way, we can stop the bleeding. Hear, heartily agree. I can't believe this. This sounds like a column I wrote. I mean, I shouldn't say this because knowing the city of Chicago, he's getting called in an office right now by someone. Mr. Cox, you're a little too radical. You're a little too lefty. Sign on to these big projects because that's how things go in Chicago. But that's what I've been saying for years, folks. Instead of throwing all our TIF dollars, all our property tax dollars to underwrite developments in already developing neighborhoods, why don't we use them to bolster the neighborhoods that really need help? You know, and just to hear a planning chief say he's concerned about the exodus of black people from the city of Chicago, I believe that the city of Chicago sort of like in their own way welcomed the exodus of black people from the city of Chicago. They certainly didn't do anything while it was happening throughout the 90s and the O's. They talked about gentrification as a great thing. And, you know, Alden Lowery was the guy who kind of blew the whistle on this. The great demographer Alden Lowery came on the show. Said, where is Alden? We just got to bring him back, D. Get working on that. Oh, wait.
All right, here I go.
You don't book guests. I book guests.
At gmail.com.
I remember interviewing Alden Lowery about this a long time ago. And I was asking him about the exodus of black people from Chicago. And I go, this is a serious concern. Why hasn't the city done anything about it? And I'm paraphrasing Alden's response, which was absolutely brilliant. He goes, well, Ben, apparently the people that run the city of Chicago don't see it as a problem. Anyway, I'm hoping that Maurice Cox has some influence, that this is just not idle chatter, that after I say all these things, and I may even write a column about it, they don't call him into the office and tell him to be quiet, stop talking like Ben. But it's a good start. I've never heard a planning commissioner talk this way. Maybe they really will blow up that godforsaken TIF program. All right, now back to Babs. I got to give him credit. He writes on my Facebook wall from time to time with little messages.
Bab is an avid Bendrovsky Show listener. He always weighs in on the Bendrovsky Show Facebook
page. Yeah, and I would say generally he is of the leftist persuasion.
Oh, yeah.
But he really hits it on the head here in this comment. I get very frustrated. We talked about this a couple times this week about the debates where the commentators or the questioners ask Bernie Sanders, well, how can you afford it? How can you afford your health care plan? It's going to cost billions and billions. It's just like Chicago. I always say this, you know, in the city of Chicago, when they want to spend money on nurses, well, we don't have any money. That's an outrageous proposal. We can't afford that. But then, of course, when they want to throw money at Amazon, hey, the sky's the limit. So it's the same thing with Bernie. Bernie says, hey, I got a program that would benefit everybody in this country, health care for all. And the questioners are like, oh, my God, be real, Bernie. How can we possibly afford that? Meanwhile, what is it, D? $738 billion with a B a year in our defense spending? Oh, nobody ever asks about that, right? How many billions of dollars in tax cuts did the Republicans and Donnie Trump pass in 2017? But no. So, but when
yes, that's billion with a B.
Thank you, Mayor Lightfoot. So anyway, but what Bab points out, I could tell you how Bernie should have been reframing the health insurance debate for 4 years. You have to reject the insurance industry's language because it's a three-card Monty. What's a premium? What's a deductible? How much do I pay a year? What affects what I pay a year? After 50 years of debates, people's eyes gloss over when they start hearing insurance industry verbiage, and they're easily led to believe the smooth corporate finance guy has their best interest in mind. But from the dawn of civilization, there is one word that resonates with mankind: taxes. Bernie has to explain why everything in terms of taxes. America, pay no attention to the labels intended to deceive you. A premium is a healthcare tax. Americans pay $5,000 to $20,000 a year in healthcare taxes. And as he points out, it's the same thing with college education, etc. Absolutely. If you view the amount of money you pay for a necessity like healthcare as a tax, you may have a different attitude about it. You know, everybody thinks they act as though sort of inserted in the logic of the questions that are being framed, asked of Bernie Sanders, is like that the current health care is cost no money. It's free. Like they're just getting it for free. Well, it's going to cost money. How can we afford that? Well, we're all paying, already paying billions and billions of dollars for healthcare. It comes out of our salaries, out of our paychecks. CNN is very concerned about the amount of taxes people have to pay, not so much concerned about the money they're already paying in premiums and for healthcare. So excellent point by Babs. I have to concede. Wish I had thought of it first, but can't think everything, right, D?
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Life's hard.
All right. It's easier to agree with Babs and other my left-of-center friends than it is to agree with the planning commissioner. But I have to say one more time. Got to say it, D. Maurice Cox was right. Stop throwing away money in those big TIF ticket items and start spending in the neighborhoods where it was tended. We got a great show today, everybody. Ramana Hussein will be here. Ramana's recommendations. We're going to go through the stories today and also talk about Oscars. We're all fired up. She's going to be part of our special Oscar show that's coming up next week. Candace Castillo, political strategist and consultant. She's sort of a Warren supporter. Be interesting on her take about the debates, what went down in the debates. Also, she has some interesting ideas about impeachment. That's unfolding as we speak. And then Dave Glowatz, Mr. Bike, ring, ring, ring. He'll come in here ringing that bell. Ring that bell. That's a song.
Thank you. I was wondering.
He will be breaking down the city council meeting on Wednesday. It's always fun to have to do this with Dave. He brings in... did he send it to me yet?
Yeah.
Oh, he did. You know what? They just bypassed me. Why bother sending it to Ben in the first place? I agree with
He's
that.
Sending audio to me.
Oh, I love when they send the audio. So you play the audio. We dissect the audio. You get to hear Alderman in action. Get to hear Mayor Lightfoot in action. Good stuff. We break it down and analyze it. Get your paper and pencils out, folks. We're going to tell you what's really going on with government in the city of Chicago. But before we do any of that, the young man from Alton. Oh, yeah. Back home, they call him Dr. Doobie. With the news.
Hey, everyone. How's it going? For the fourth and final time this week, let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. Actually, before we do that, Ben, I think all of our listeners, those who listen live and those who download, I think we'd like to hear those noises you were making at the top of the program. Can we hear the song of the day one more time?
Oh, Archie Bell and Durrell. Yeah. First, we got to dance. It's used to call the Tighten Up. I just heard that Tighten Up. It's one of my favorite songs from the 60s. Again, long before anybody in this studio was born. And I'll tell you what, who knows the Tighten Up? Miles Porter's father knows the Tighten Up, that's for sure. Maybe Miles Porter's mother knows it as well. Yeah, Tighten Up was the 60s songs. Archie Bell and Drells.
Editor Miles.
Editor Miles, yes. Editor Miles. Mm-hmm. So do you want me to sing more of the Tighten Up?
Please, no. Okay. All right. Here we go.
Can I just say one thing? What? In Houston, we got a new dance, and we call it the Tighten
Up. Oh, hey now. No one cares. Okay, first up, our Illinois governor.
After years of neglect, Illinois is finally getting its mojo back.
Today, J.B. Pritzker is doing what he always does. All together, everyone. You too, Ben. Signing legislation.
Yeah, I saw this, yeah.
Today he's at UCAN, signing legislation that will eliminate driver's license suspensions as a penalty for non-moving violations. For those wondering, UCAN is in Chicago. So once again, to our downstate, not a city listeners, no, you did not see J.B. Pritzker at your local Wendy's just now. Wasn't him. It's just some other... well-dressed portly fella enjoying a delicious baked potato, all right? Sorry.
A little advertisement for Wendy's there, huh? I thought you were a Popeyes man.
I'll take it all, buddy, okay. All right?
And he loves Arby's, ladies and gentlemen. Every time we go by the Arby's downtown, I gotta stop in that Arby's. It's so good.
I actually do say that. All right, big day on Sunday statewide. We haven't discussed this in a while, Ben. Time for a little update here. On Sunday, Democratic state senators who hold the majority will gather in Springfield to decide who will be their next president. I know, during football playoffs. What? That's crazy.
I know, man.
Remember, everyone, it was late last year when Democratic Senate President John Cullerton announced that he would be retiring in 2020. A handful of qualified senators got in line and have been campaigning to replace him ever since. Honestly, can't remember how many and who all of them were. Doesn't matter because we're now down to two.
Mm-hmm.
after Senator L.G. Sims officially dropping out of the race. It's now Don Harmon, the assistant majority leader from Oak Park, and Senator Kimberly, no, not Lightfoot, Light Ford, mm-hmm. Kimberly Light Ford, going one-on-one for Illinois Senate president. You know what? I think this is better than football, Ben. Who are we going with, buddy? We going with Kim Lightford or are we going Don Harmon?
Well, if you ask me, if I pretend I'm a state senator, I would vote for Kimberly Lightford.
Going Lightford?
Yeah, Lightford. Even though I have this thing in my head, I keep wanting to call her Lightfoot. But it's Lightford, okay? That dyslexia is firing up on all cylinders. Lightford, Lightfoot. But no, come on. We just had a white guy, Johnny Cullerton. Why don't we let a black woman be this Senate president for once? You know, let's spread it around a little bit. Yeah, I'm for Kimberly Lightford. I don't know. Realistically, will this mean more progressive legislation out of the Senate? We'll have to wait and see on that one. Johnny Cullerton was not exactly a progressive, to put it mildly. He was sort of Rahm's favorite state senator. His job, by and large, was to block progressive legislation that people in the city of Chicago wanted, that Mayor Rahm didn't want. That and the fact that, I'll tell you what, he could tell a joke. John Cullerton can tell a joke, all right?
Oh, hey.
So, yeah, so if that is your chief qualification, he's your guy. So I'm hoping that we'll switch things in the state Senate, and the Senate will no longer be the place where they just, you know, send legislation to die. You know that old game they play, like Michael Madigan would allow legislation to pass the House, like, let's say, the elected school board bill, and then it would die in the Senate, and everybody in Chicago would be like, what happened here? I thought we had this legislation passed. And then the next year they would try it again. And yep, one more time, die in the House. I mean, pass the House, die in the Senate. Yeah, that's how it goes in the state of Illinois. Progressives, you know, everybody wants to be a progressive, but when it comes to progressing progressive, not so progressive, if you follow what I'm saying. So maybe this will change in the state Senate.
All right, so there you are. Ben's going with Lightford. We're going to have to wait until Sunday to know who the next Senate president will be, and we'll have to wait until Tuesday to talk about it.
But yes, and I've been reading about the selection process. It's pretty interesting. I've never followed a Senate president selection process, but, you know, everybody gets to vote. Republicans get to vote, too. I don't know about that. Why do they get to vote? You know, they're the minority party. Oh, isn't that interesting when it comes to minority rights? Republicans are against them for, like, real minorities, but when they're in the minority party, hey, we got rights too. Just pointing out that inconsistency with my not so beloved Republican Party.
Oh, and hey, to all of our Illinois senators out there, I know you're all getting together on Sunday, your day off. No shady business, all right?
No. You know, by the way, I just realized with my track record, I probably was a sealed doom for Lightford by endorsing her candidacy for president.
Well, I don't know. You voted Lightfoot and she won.
That is correct.
You had a good record going lately.
I voted Lightfoot, and she won. And then she promptly flip-flopped on that TIF deal. But you know what, D? I'm going to be a positive, okay? Yes, she flip-flopped on Lincoln Yards. Yes, she killed the lawsuit that would have killed Lincoln Yards. But her planning commissioner, Maurice Cox, came into this. It must be this room, D. It must be something about this room with the sign on the wall and, you know, your presence sitting there. And it's like, uh-oh, I feel my inner Ben Jarofsky. Because Lori Lightfoot, when she was in here, she was, like, talking like me, too. So it must be something about this room.
Something.
Yeah. Then, of course, they leave the room and, oh, thank God I'm done with that room. So we'll see if Maurice Cox is... you know, as progressive outside of this room as he is in this room.
But seriously, senators, don't go placing your bets on who's going to win, Lightford or Don Harmon. No shady business. And speaking of shady business, the following comes from the Chicago Sun-Times and Fran the Woe Man Spielman. Embattled Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan's hand-picked alderman was accused Thursday of engaging in, quote, prohibited political activity by putting his name and Madigan's on a graffiti blaster bought in 2013 with taxpayer money. Yes, this is an update on that damn dirty corruption in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Marty Quinn.
Inspector General Joe Ferguson's quarterly report does not identify Alderman Marty Quinn. Ben, of what ward?
Third. Come on! 1-3.
That's correct.
Thank you.
our host, ladies and gentlemen.
He knows the city council, all right?
Inspector General Joe Ferguson's quarterly report does not identify Alderman Marty Quinn as the alderman who used city equipment to promote himself and his political patron and used a photo of the equipment in a political ad featuring himself and his state representative. It simply accused, quote, an alderman of playing politics with city equipment and of knowingly allowing, quote, a non-city employee to use the city-owned graffiti blaster throughout the state, throughout the state representative's district, which extends outside the city limits. Ben, what the hell? Or did I just read here?
Am I outraged about this? All right, so folks, you get graffiti blasters going throughout the 13th Ward on the far southwest side of Chicago, and it has Madigan's name on it, and it has Alderman Marty Quinn's name on it. So effectively, they're using a public thing, a graffiti blaster, to promote a private politician, an alderman, a state rep. Is that right? No. N-O. Okay? It's not right.
Stop pointing at me.
I don't know. The things that people get outraged in the city of Chicago. But I just got finished talking about how you had this program, an anti-poverty program that's intended for the poorest neighborhoods of all, and the city council passed a $1.3 billion, that's billion with a B, handout to some upscale developers to develop a neighborhood that doesn't need development. And everybody's like, oh, well, seems good to me. We call it economic development. But the reformers in Chicago are outraged, shocked and outraged that Michael Madigan and Marty Quinn put their names on a graffiti blaster. I would say that reformers in the city of Chicago will do absolutely anything to avoid the essential corruption in this city, which is like the rich take money that's supposed to go to the poor. That's just me thinking about it. But I'm going to join their bandwagon. I'm outraged. Tell you that Marty Quinn put his name on a graffiti blaster. But I'm more outraged that Marty Quinn put his vote on that TIF deal. How about that, D?
Take a chill pill, man.
Oh, sorry, chill out, dude.
Hold on. Oh, it's legal now, D. So, no, am I outraged, you know? And by the way, it's funny how they just keep going. Marty Quinn, Madigan's handpicked alderman. You know, they just want to put Madigan's name. You talk about Madigan putting his name on a graffiti blaster. Everybody wants to put Madigan's name on any story. Madigan's handpicked alderman. Well, the voters of the 13th Ward have elected him, I think, two times, D? I think it was the last election was this overwhelming victory. He beat the kid. What was the kid's name, D? You remember that?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not.
Come on, you can do it.
I can't remember.
I don't even have to look it up because I remember. Oh. The old guy with the memory.
All right.
David Krupa, was it? K-R-U-P-A?
Yeah, that was
maybe he's the guy who was like, he loved Trump, the Trump supporter. I'm supposed to be outraged by the Trump supporter. Anyway, Marty Quinn went overboard to try to get Krupa off the ballot. And he prevailed. He was on the ballot, and then Marty mopped the floor with him anyway. So I got this thing, but can I just continue since I'm really on a roll here? Thank you.
This host?
When I'm driving down Ashland on the rare moments, well, not that rare. I try to, you know, D likes to drive the car home, so I try to drive every now and then. I go past these horses. Isn't that what they're called, D? The old horses, you know?
Not like the animal?
No, not like the kind of horse that J.B. Pritzker puts on a farm, but the wooden horses.
I'm not a perfect person.
And they still say they're horses. You know, the wooden horses that you put in the street to block traffic?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Don't they call horses?
I don't know.
Come on, man. You're from Alton. You should know this kind of stuff. And it's still
I know about actual horses.
The man loves horses, ladies and gentlemen. Have you ever ridden a horse?
Yes.
I've tried it a couple times. I'm not feeling a horse. You know, it's always, I don't know, something weird about going up and down. Anyway, it still says courtesy of First Ward Alderman Flores. Manny Flores hasn't been the alderman of the First Ward since, I want to say, 2011. Don't quote me on that.
I'm not.
Okay. For 10 trivia points, who replaced him as alderman of the First Ward? Yeah.
Joe Moreno?
Very good. Whoa! Some of this stuff is wearing off on you. Anyway, it's still, you see these horses, you know, property or courtesy of, and I remember Terry Gabinski in the 32nd Ward had his horses. You still see some of those floating around. Where was the outrage about that, huh? When Manny Flores put his name on a horse. So now, listen.
Someone probably just tuned in. Floating horses. What the?
All right. So listen, reformers in the city of Chicago, all you do-gooders on the lakefront who love Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar so much, I'll join your crusade against Mike Madigan putting his name in a graffiti blaster when you once, just once, join my crusade against doling out billions of dollars to high-price developers. Huh? What's that you say, lakefront reformers? Yeah, you're too outraged about the graffiti blaster.
Moving on, as for our Chicago mayor, today Lori Lightfoot is at the Marriott Marquis for Chicago's annual interfaith breakfast in honor of Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, once a year, Chicagoans decide they believe in peace and love and harmony and integration. Once a year, D. Not even like a...
In the beginning of the year.
It's the beginning of the year, and it's like an hour. And then, as soon as that's over, we're back to fighting and gouging each other's eyes out.
Yeah, rumor has it she tried talking them into making this a little more productive by pushing it up a few hours and having them a good old-fashioned luncheon. But the Marriott simply didn't get it. She loves luncheons, everybody.
Don't they understand? The mayor loves luncheons. You watch. This being Chicago next year, we're going to have a Martin Luther King luncheon. No, they do it early. It's like all the movers and shakers. They get it done early, you know. They want to get all that brotherhood out of the way early. So, you know, I got that done with. Now I got the rest of the day to just gouge everybody's eyeballs out. So anyway, Chicago,
so that's
brotherhood.
That's the news. Of course, we'll keep you posted on those stories as today's program rolls along. We got a little more time until our guest, Ramana Hussein, joins us for another Ramana Rundown. What are you going to be talking about with Ramana, Ben?
Well, we're going to go through some of the stories in the Chicago Sun-Times. This IPRA investigator revealed info on police shooting story. Every time I thought I've reached the end of Chicago scams, there's a new one that emerges. This one is quite enlightening, man. I'll tell you what. You know what? Once a year, for an hour, the movers and shakers of Chicago get together to preach brotherhood. Then when that hour's up, they go back to doing what they're doing, what they usually do, which includes coming up with scams to screw people. This is an interesting new one. I hadn't thought of this one before. And, of course, we're going to talk Oscars. Somehow or other, the Oscars managed to nominate five directors, not one of whom is a woman. That's interesting.
Oh, you've been ranting and raving about this one all week, Ben.
We're going to be talking about this next week as well, a whole special bonus. And Sergio Mims, I have so many outrages about the Oscars.
As a downstate guy, I don't get the Oscars. We don't watch it downstate. Oh, I'm sure there's people that watch it downstate.
First of all, you don't even live downstate anymore.
Well, I can't, I can't adjust. I don't know. I just can't get into the Oscars. I don't know.
Number
why.
Two, you claim to be so knowledgeable about downstate, but we did our survey, and our survey proved that Bruce Springsteen is far more popular than Jimmy Buffett is downstate. The survey showed.
Number two.
We didn't do that.
And no, but you may be right about the Oscars. Nobody watches them upstate either, so I'm pretty much the only.
I mean, like, when I moved up here, they're like people having parties, like get-togethers, all about the Oscars. That's
I never have a party. I just watch the Oscars. I've been watching the Oscars since the 60s.
All right, let's go to the YouTube live stream chat before we take a break here. Shout out to everyone who has weighed in here. Looks like the gang's all here. We got Brianna here, Steven's here, and we got that right-wing feller that's been weighing in lately. He's there. KMA Barry's here. Ben, what's KMA stand for again? I can't remember.
I'm not allowed to say. You won't let me swear. Kiss my beep.
That's what that stands for, guys. All right, so let's read your comments here. Let's see. Kyle weighed in. He says, as a Chicago voter, I only get outraged about ketchup on hot dogs. Anything else that seems outrageous, I choose to ignore because I'm vegging out in front of a TV.
That sounds like a typical Chicago voter.
Speaking of TVs, Barry weighed in. Barry, haven't seen you in a while. Welcome back. He says here, just had time to check what's happening. Dr. Doobie, my wife... My name's Dennis. Dr. Doobie, my wife made me fix her phone so with the one click she can cast our podcast on his 50-inch Samsung television. You guys looked good life-size.
What can I say?
We're on this guy's 50-inch television.
Man, what can I say?
Oh, our right-wing friend weighed in. Trump already won 2020. That's a
You know what's funny? When people, they go, Ben, I'm going to make a prediction. Jeff Johnson said this yesterday. Ben, I'm going to make a prediction. Donald Trump's going to be like, they're going out on a limb, you know? I mean, in the last 40 years, only one incumbent president has been defeated. So it's kind of like a safe bet to bet on Donnie Trump right now. Okay. So.
And finally, we'll read Steven's comment. He's a devotee to the Ben Jarofsky Show, and this comment proves it because he knows our host, Ben Jarofsky. Earlier, you announced you just knew the ward Marty Quinn was for, 13th Ward. Steven weighs in and goes, yeah, but where did he go to high school?
Good one. Good one. Marty Quinn, I used to know this. I should know. I want to say Brother Rice, but...
Frank! Frank, if you're listening, look that up.
I'm going to go with Brother Rice.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Could be St. Rita, though. Oh. Plenty of others. Catholic school in the Southwest.
Listeners, if you're tuning out now, you're crazy, all right? Romano Rundown coming up.
I know where Romano went to high school.
Also, we're going to find out where Marty Quinn went to high school. Don't go anywhere, people. It's the Ben Jarofsky Show live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture. Food. Arts and entertainment. Weekly concert listings. Weekly event listings. The environment. Travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader. Free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Did you know that 40% of the people in Illinois opt to be cremated? Well, it's true. And Chicagoland Cremation Options honors their wishes by providing cremation services directly to the general public. Chicagoland Cremation Options provides an affordable, ethical, and easy cremation arrangement, whether in person or online. Save thousands and streamline the process by going directly to Chicagoland Cremation Options. It's a family-owned business operated by my good friend, Douglas Klein. Here's how you reach them. Chicagoland Cremation Options.com. One more time. Chicagoland Cremation Options.com.
Right now at Chicago.suntimes.com. It's this week's Fran Spielman show. Ben, you were just talking about the fella. His name's Maurice Cox. Maurice Cox was the guest of Fran Spielman this week. He's, what's his
title?
The
planning commissioner of the city of Chicago. And I found myself agreeing with what he said. Right on, Maurice Cox.
Here's a little clip of Maurice on the Fran Spielman show.
You're talking about a massive rewrite of the zoning code.
No. I am talking about convening a conversation with Chicagoans about the wide cross-section of things that go into making up the quality of life. That's transportation. That's the role of our parks. That's our housing, what type of housing we want. The sum total of all of those is what I'm talking about. You can't isolate one item. Because they're all interconnected.
He's a smart guy. It's Maurice Cox, this week's guest on the Fran Spielman Show, available at ChicagoSunTimes.com and wherever else you download your favorite podcast. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Romano Hussein with me every Friday, Romano Rundown. And this story was just really grim and depressing, Romano. Hours after March for Peace, a shooting shakes St. Sabina's, front page story in the Sun-Times today. Tell folks a little bit about it.
Yeah, the story's very sad. This was a young man who was 23 years old. His name is Imoni Toma, and he was only 23 when he was shot late Wednesday night. There was a March for Peace at St. Sabina Church. As everyone knows, that's the church where Father Flager, a very outspoken priest, Roman Catholic priest, who talks about violence a lot and just different things. He kind of weighs in on a lot of things. This young man was homeless, and 2 years ago he showed up at the church, seeing if he could, if they could help in some way, you know, with his life. You know, he had a few misdemeanor arrests, and you know, he was waiting to get his record like cleared out, or already happened, or those charges were dropped, or never really kind of, you know, he was just someone that was a little lost. And he ended up working in the mentoring program at the church and lived in the apartment. I think he scraped enough money to, and did like different jobs, but he told people at the church he wanted a career, not a lot of odd jobs. So he seemed to be heading in the right direction. Anyway, he was shot in the parking lot Wednesday night and died in the back seat of a car of a person that drove by, a motorist that drove by. So it's a pretty sad story.
Yes.
It's like one of those stories that it's tragic when anybody dies, you know, but we hear about this story, this guy seemed to be heading in the right direction, had a lot going for him. And you hear about, and he's only 23, mm-hmm. you know, barely lived his life. It's a guy from Hyde Park High School, and his dream was to become a welder. So it's a very sad story. We were doing follow-up on it. We had the story yesterday, just to let you know, and I don't think we had that much on it. And then, you know, we just thought it was an important story to tell and probably knew there was more background. So we tried to look for more. I know the reporters who worked on it looked for more family members, or they didn't talk to family members, but they talked to people that knew this guy. So
has anybody been arrested?
Nobody's been arrested as far as we know.
Yeah. Well, the on top of everything else, the part that gets me is it was considered neutral ground.
Yeah, it's neutral ground.
The church and Father Flager. I've disagreed with Father Flager on issues from time to time, but I have to commend him for just being very consistent on the issue of taking guns out of the
yes, he's
the city of Chicago and the need to stop the senseless violence, and to be shot outside the church. It's like, is no place safe? And then it was just another story in the Sun-Times, not to just dwell on the gloom and doom, but of a shooting at a barbershop.
East Garfield Park barbershop. In fact, I was talking to, we're waiting for a story. I was talking to the reporter that was working on that story, a follow-up, Mitch Dudek. So the shooting happened. Five people were injured, mm-hmm. including kids. And he talked to the owner of the barbershop, and he also talked to a woman who was a stylist at the shop. The story's not in yet, but she had left her apron on her chair, you know, the chair where she usually cuts people's hairs, and there was a bullet hole when she went back in today. And so she talked to a reporter. So it was just, I don't think there's any arrests in that shooting, but that's obviously an ongoing investigation. But you hear stories like that. And, you know, people always say that, you know, they're a little worried when the summer comes by. You know, cops always tell you that, because, you know, summers where, you know, they say like more shootings happen, but mm-hmm. apparently, you know, it still happens when it's cold weather outside. And it's just a sad story all in all. And so we'll be hearing a little, I mean, I'm sure we're pursuing, we have our reporters checking up on both those cases to see if police have any leads as to, you know, who could have done both of these shootings.
And then there's some articles about murders and investigations that some stories that just never seem to end. And this one is an article that the Sun-Times had: appeals court defamation suit stemming from Alstree's Simon case should proceed. Very complicated story. Try to break it down.
Yeah, I'll try to break it down. This is a story that I'm actually pretty familiar with, because when I started off as a reporter, the Anthony Porter case happened. This is a man that was accused of killing he was convicted of killing two people, Jerry Hillard and Marilyn Green, in 1982. When I was a young reporter working at City Hall, the charges were dropped against him, because at the time, David Protest, who worked for Northwestern University, he was a big rock star at that time, because he worked in a lot of wrongful conviction cases.
Not literally a rock star.
No,
but yeah,
you know what I mean.
Rock, sorry.
Anyway, he basically said that he had videotaped a man confessing to the murder and the murders, and that man was Alstree Simon. So Alstree Simon ends up being convicted. He ends up pleading guilty to the murders, but Anthony Porter gets released from jail, prison, and then Alstree Simon goes to prison, got sentenced to 37 years. He ended up pleading guilty to the murders. Then it turns out that, you know, state's attorney Anita Alvarez did a whole reinvestigation on the case, and it turns out that David Protest and the students had worked with a private investigator named Paul Cialino. I think that's how it's pronounced. Anyway, he's the one that put out this lawsuit, and he's suing Alstree Simon and nine others, saying that, you know, Alstree Simon defamed them. Because what happened was Anita Alvarez looked in this case and said that Northwestern students and David Protest used aggressive tactics in getting unethical tactics to get Alstree Simon to talk about his quote unquote confessions. And Anita Alvarez ended up, and then so in 2014, Alstree Simon gets released from prison. And Anita Alvarez said that it was Anthony Porter who actually committed these crimes, but they can't, you know, retry him because of double jeopardy. That's what Anita Alvarez said. So anyway, Paul Cialino files this lawsuit. It was dropped, and then he appeals to the appellate court, and the appellate court said that it should be remanded to the county courts. system. Mm-hmm. So this lawsuit is still pending now. So I was at 26 and Cal when these when the Northwestern University's case was up before a judge, and David Protas, you know, had come to the court hearings, and they talked about, you know, the different tactics that, you know, the Northwestern students had used. And I think somebody was paid for an interview, if I'm remembering my record. I could be wrong, but I don't know if you remember, but I just remember that there was like talk, and I remember the students we tried, I remember reaching out to David Protas at the time because, you know, there'd be these court hearings, and every time they did these court hearings, it would be more and more, you know, of a newsworthy story. And David Protas ended up leaving Northwestern. I'm sure you know that. Mm-hmm. And he has an independent wrongful conviction organization that he works for, or at least he did up until then. So I remember the case, and just there were so many pieces in this puzzle. So Paul Cialino was this private investigator who's now suing. So it's just keeps going. Yeah, and so it's been 20 years since 99, since Anthony Porter. And that's when I was pretty much I had been in the business for about 2.5 years. And I remember when it happened, and I think the Chicago Tribune might have broken the case, if I remember correctly, but I could be wrong, because I remember I was working at City Hall and there's other reporters that were working on it at the time because it was a big deal. And
well,
so
this is a common story in Cook County and Chicago. Ramona, you know this because you cover the criminal courts building. Wrongful convictions.
Yes.
And wrongful convictions that are bred out of all sorts of abuses, either just outright torture mm-hmm. of defendants or to get them to confess the things they didn't do, or shoddy investigations, mm-hmm. Or lack of detectives so that the investigations don't have the manpower they need to be fully to be completed. I mean, it there's a long series of them. And this goes back even further. 1982 was when the murders happened, which is, so it's almost 40 years of this case being in the public's eye. And do you have a sense of who actually committed the murders? Do you personally have
a sense? Well, I don't know. I just remember, it's so hard to tell at this point, what exactly happened, who's telling the truth. Obviously when somebody is released from prison, there's a lot of accolades. And, I think as someone who's covered a lot of these wrongful conviction cases, and especially when it comes to police torture, those are just so mind-boggling, how that happened. And the John Birch era was around that time. So, the early 80s, I believe mm-hmm. so. So, we still have, it's not this case, but there's a lot of other cases that are still pending that, were that old or just a little, maybe a little less old. But, there are some cases, I always tell people, just because someone's wrongfully convicted, it doesn't mean they didn't do it. That's what
explain that.
Well, because if you're forced to confess mm-hmm. by using, by illegally beating someone, is that really, that doesn't mean the person didn't do it, but they're forced to confess. You're using torturing them to confess, and it needs to be done in a proper way. I mean, there's definitely cases like that where you listen to the story. There was one case where there was a man who was wrongfully convicted in a pretty brutal rape and murder of a woman. And it was sort of a gang rape. And the charges were dropped in his case, but he was never exonerated. So there's a difference between wrongfully convicted and exonerated. When you're exonerated, you can actually ask the state to reimburse you or get money back. When you're not exonerated, so some judges don't technically, I think it's certificate of innocence. That's what I want to say. I shouldn't say exonerated, but I think they could be interchangeable. But a lot of people seek a certificate of innocence. If they don't have the certificate of innocence, they can't. So I remember that rape case, the judge told, he wanted a certificate of innocence or an exoneration. And the judge said, you were in that house, in the room. Don't tell me that you weren't part of this rape. And he just didn't believe it. And when you listen to the facts of the case, I can say now, it's highly unlikely that this guy was in his room while his friends were raping this woman.
Yeah.
So, and it's just like the way this woman was tortured and beaten. I saw, I think a lot of people, if they saw that case, they would probably agree with the judge. So I'm just saying, just because someone's wrongfully convicted doesn't mean that they didn't commit the crime. That's what I'm trying to say. But there are a lot of cases. I mean, I sat through a lot of hearings or wrongful conviction hearings or hearings where the charges were dropped and you're just like, how did this person get caught in this? And, you know, a lot of these men are really young. Mm-hmm. So when you're interrogating someone at 17, 18, 19 years of age, they keep asking him all these questions and they eventually break.
Yeah.
So, and then they end up going to prison. And there are cases where you're just like, there's no way that guy did it.
Yeah.
Just like listening to evidence. And DNA evidence has changed that in many ways too.
Because
our DNA evidence or DNA testing wasn't that sophisticated in the 80s.
Yeah. Then there's this story in the paper, which I don't know if you had a chance to read, but it's sort of related where this investigator for the city has been charged. Essentially, Romana, this is just so Chicago. When I read this story today, I read it in both newspapers, Fran Spielman and Sam Charles in the Sun-Times and Tribune also had it as well. Some investigator for the city who works in the department that investigates police misconduct allegations, the Independent Police Review Authority, it's no longer in existence, but whatever, was accused of taking the names of people who've filed reports and sending them over to lawyers, private lawyers, with the number so that the private lawyers could contact them. And, you know, I'm like, I pretty watch all the sleaze, we'll get into movies, but I'm a big fan of novels about sleazy, you know, cops and investigators and lawyers and movies about them and corruption. But I'm like,
this one's trying to be nice.
Sometimes reality is like, I didn't even think of that. Where they're
trying to be the nice guy. The question is, was he trying to sway them towards his friends?
Like, I think that's what it was. Yeah, I don't think there was anything nice about this.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is like, oh, hey, I have some friends who might be able to help
you.
But no, that's what did he think he was being a helpful?
I don't know.
But
just the allegation.
I would think that you would know that as someone if they were on the IPRA board or the IPRA.
He was an investigator.
Yeah, you would think that as an investigator, you kind of stay out of that. You didn't do your job. You don't give people advice.
Yeah, no, I don't think he was giving
no,
the
no,
advice.
No, no, I know. He was just
literally passing the number to the lawyer.
Well, I mean, he's kind of giving advice to the lawyers or business to the lawyers.
Yeah, but it's like, oh my goodness, my city is Chicago. Just when you think it's not going to get any lower. All right, let's transition from these horrific stories. We'll move eventually get to horrific in another way, the Oscars. Beach Bummer. Man, first of all, another great Sun-Times headline, Beach Bummer.
Yeah.
The lakefront is eroding somehow or other. I think it's connected to
climate
change.
Warming.
Yeah, global warming. But anyway, we have no more beaches in the city of Chicago.
Well, two beaches actually in the neighborhood I live in, Rogers Park. So we live right on the lake. I don't know if I should give my address in case I have any stalkers.
Don't.
I don't think I. But anyway, we live by one of the beaches. And so last weekend, the storm was pretty, you know what? It actually didn't seem that bad as someone from Chicago when you're inland, but when you're looking out the window at the lake, it was like the waves were high. They weren't as high as, you know, the National Weather Service had said, but this is where we are. I'm sure downtown they could have been higher, but you could definitely see the water coming in pretty close to us. And so it turns out that two beaches near us, Rogers and Howard Beach, they no longer exist. And the city, it's going to take them because of this weekend storm that we had. And I think they said it's going to take a couple of years for them to redo these beaches. So now there's going to be a bunch of rocks. And I actually run along the beach, but I don't run around along the whole beach, but I go all the way to Evanston and then I come back to make like a 6 mile run sometimes. So I definitely pass by those areas, not necessarily run on the sand, but I pass by them. So the last two, I usually run on Friday mornings before I come in, and I didn't run for the last 2 weeks. I ran last Friday, but I didn't run on Sunday or Friday. So I haven't seen the damage, but Mick, my husband, has, and he picked up a pair of glasses and a Princess Leia action figure from his walk last week. And he's like, "Do you want these glasses?" I'm like, "Oh, I don't even wear glasses regularly, and I don't like those glasses." And
yeah.
And his Princess Leia action figures on his book stand right now.
probably more details than Mick wanted shared, but anyway.
Hey,
always love
a Romana rundown without
throwing Mick under the bus.
Why would I be throwing in the bus? He loves Star Wars, so
he loves
Princess Leia. So I mean, I'm just saying.
By the way, Miles loves Star Wars as well. I don't know if you.
Star Wars, but I'm not that in love with it. He said he's going to make me watch the prequels, and I'm like, I don't want to.
God, that's wow. That's more than I could deal with. One of the things I'm very envious of when I go visit Mick and Romana is how cool it was. I ride my bike over there, and I'll be looking out at that beach that's right there. This is Chicago. I'm like, Rogers Park, man, what a cool place. And now it is a beach bummer.
So that is sad. You know, there's a lot of people that come out to Rogers Park and, you know, have various picnics. And, you know, when I'm running sometimes in the summer, you see like everyone and it's like a multicultural group, like, you know, barbecuing, you know, one group is barbecuing like Jamaican food. The other group is barbecuing Indian food. And then, you know, other people are stereotypical Americans eating hot dogs. But I'm just saying it's really cool to see. So it's like. Less activity.
Well, we were before you got in here, we were talking about Martin Luther King Day, the annual breakfast where the movers and shakers have in Chicago, where once a year for about an hour they get together and dedicate at least an hour to brotherhood, peace, and love. And then as soon as it's over, they go back to being
jerks,
you know, at each other's throats. But at Rogers Park, anyway, it's like the one neighborhood in the city where they actually like at least share a beach spot together. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is cool.
All right, now let's get to the Oscars. You and I have been dying to talk. I bumped into Romana in the hallway on Tuesday. I forget when it was. And we were both ranting and railing about.
I thought it was you texting.
Oh, texting.
I woke up to alerts about the Joker getting 11 nominations when I woke up on Monday.
And yeah. All right.
Now, I mean, not to say that I do want to see the Joker.
You've not seen it.
I should tell everyone I have not seen it. Right. Just because I remember the reviews not being super favorable and people saying it was excessive. But I do like Joaquin Phoenix. And I'm he's a great actor. And I'm sure he did a great job. And that's what people said was the best thing about the movie, that he did such a good job. So, you know, I'm not going to take away anything from him, but I just think a lot of other movies got shut out.
All right,
And it was interesting. I don't know if you, and you know, obviously the complaint is that people, a lot of people of color and a lot of women and women of color were totally shut out.
All right, let's get right at it. First of all, I have seen Joker, all right, and Joaquin Phoenix definitely deserves to be nominated, and that's it.
You don't think the win?
No. The rest of the movie is a one-trick pony, okay? So the rest of the movie, I know all our Joker fans out there are really outraged, including one Dr.
Hey!
D over here who loves
Joker.
I love
that movie.
Okay?
I'm sure it was good. Yeah.
You know, but it's basically a one-trick pony. I can name five movies that are more deserving of being nominated that didn't get nominated, with The Farewell being at the top of the list. All right, so do you, Romana, believe that the Academy Awards has a bias against women?
Yes. And people of color. I mean, I don't know if it's a bias, but it's like, oh, I can only watch movies that I can relate to. You know, I don't know. I feel like, how old are those people who are on the Academy? Like, who are these people? Like, with the Golden Globe, we know it's a Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And I heard that's a sham, too. It's just random people. Like, it's really easy to get on this group. You don't even have to be a movie critic to get on this group. But the Academy is like some secret. I think they did do a breakdown of who the Academy is. And it is mostly white males, from what I understand. And you know the guy who made this movie, Todd Phillips?
I don't know him, but I know who he is.
Yeah, but he's complained about how he can't do comedies anymore because he did The Hangover. Mm-hmm. And he's like, everybody's too woke now and, you know, everybody's so sensitive. And I'm like, you can still make movies, but, I mean, what do you want to be, racist and sexist? I think that's what some people want. And
say this or tweet it?
No, he said this in an interview. Okay, he's like, right. I can't make comedies anymore because everybody's offended. And, you know, for the longest time.
That's true. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
No,
like,
but
you can
I'm
make comedies
saying,
without offending
No, but
people.
There's so many movies that you look back now and they're problematic for women. Even a lot of teenage movies that I saw, 16 Candles, Molly Ringwald wrote about this. And she's like, you know, I was in these movies. I love them. But they have some issues, like especially when it comes to men writing female characters. It's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, they objectify women. They have no lines in movies. And I just feel like Joker, a lot of people were, you know, the commentary about Joker was just an angry white male. Let's try to understand the angry white male. So I feel like the Academy is like, yeah, you know what I mean? But it's, you know, like, oh, you know, this is the revenge of the angry white male. But I just feel like, you know, and I'm not one of those people that's just going to like a movie because it was made by an Indian person,
but
since I'm Indian. But no, I mean, I'll tell you if I think a movie is not well made, if it's made by like a woman of color, and especially if they belong to, you know, my group. But I thought The Farewell was excellent.
And it was not made by an Indian woman. So just for
It was an Asian woman, but not, it was an East Asian woman. And then Uncut Gems, which I heard, I haven't seen that one yet, but that's probably
so good.
And everybody said Adam Sandler, and he's like a Jewish man. He got robbed.
Absolutely robbed.
I like Dolomite Is My Name. I didn't think it was my favorite movie, but everybody felt
robbed.
Like Eddie Murphy got robbed.
Got robbed.
And those are all, I mean, I didn't see Uncut Gems, but I can't speak for it, but everybody who told me who watched it, my siblings watched it, they said it was really good. It's just, how could you shut all of those movies out? And then Little Women, which I saw, me and my friend in the Sun Times, I won't say who, we were talking about how we think Greta Gerwig as a person seems like a annoying hipster. But anyway, but we still think that she got robbed.
She totally got robbed.
So as a director.
As director.
You know, that movie did get some accolades. And then a lot of people feel like Jennifer Lopez. I thought Hustlers was good. I didn't think it was like excellent. But a lot of people felt like Jennifer Lopez got shut out also. And Lupita Nyong'o, I think I'm pronouncing her name right, she was in Us.
Us was this year?
Yes. And a lot of people are like, okay, so she was overlooked. And Scarlett Johansson, who I think is a very great actress but says problematic things all the time, she was nominated for both actress and supporting actress. So you're ignoring all those actresses of color. The one actress of color who was nominated was the British actress who played Harriet Tubman. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people of color were pointed out is like whenever a black person gets nominated or gets an Oscar, it's when they're playing a slave or a hooker. Or, you know, some corrupt person.
Or a crooked,
you know
what I mean? Cop.
Yeah, a crooked Denzel Washington.
Very good for knowing that.
He didn't win in Glory. I think
yes, he did.
He did win for Glory.
He shouldn't have won in Glory, in my humble opinion.
But I thought he didn't win for Glory.
Danny Aiello should have won. Here's where the white guy got screwed. Danny Aiello.
Well, that rarely happens on the spine.
That's true. Oh, throw poor Danny Aiello under a bus.
But
did you ever see Do the Right Thing?
Yes.
Danny Aiello was freaking awesome in Do the Right Thing.
But I remember when I told you when I saw that, I was like, hey, that's the dad from Papa Don't Preach.
The Madonna video.
Yeah. That was a reaction to Generation X.
Yeah.
To watch that.
I always see, we got to remember, Romana is a two generations down from me.
The one silver lining, I guess, at the Oscars with a Parasite, that one of my favorite movies of the years did get some nominations. But somebody did point out that in Parasite, you know, it got all these nominations, but none of the actors in the movie got any.
Yeah.
Love. And that's interesting. And someone said that's what happened with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Like, you know, they got a lot of awards, but none of the actors were given any. You know,
is it because
look at a bunch of foreigners. Why are we going to give it to them? We only give it to people who look like that when it comes to a foreign film.
They won't give it to someone not speaking English.
Yeah.
Although Antonio Banderas was nominated this year.
But that was Pride and Glory, and that was made by Pedro Almodóvar, who's a Spanish director.
Yeah, but they still speaking a foreign language, so it gets thrown out.
Yeah, but why? But and the other thing that made a lot of people annoyed is that Issa Rae, who's on the show Insecure, and John Cho, who was in Harold Kumar, they were the ones making the announcement. They had two people of color making the announcements of the Oscar nominees. And I think they, while they were reading all these names, kind of knew what was happening. So Issa Rae, I don't know if you read, she named all the best directors, all the white men, or I think it was mostly white men, who were nominated for best directors. And she said, congratulations to all those men.
Yeah.
Maybe the director from Parasite was nominated for that too, but I'm not sure. But she just basically pointed out that they're all men. She probably felt like a woman of color,
well,
or a woman in general, was ignored.
I We just want to promote the discussion we're going to have in a week. Sergio Mims, who probably knows more about movies than anybody in the city of Chicago, will be in studio. We're going to do a bonus, and Romana is going to join us. So she's going to she has like two movies she still has to watch before she could do this. I have to, because you have to. Although you can, Uncut Gems.
I'll try to watch that this weekend.
We didn't get nominated for anything.
Yeah,
zero,
I know, but
nothing.
I can still watch it. And complain about it.
Yeah,
right?
Complain about it because
I feel like I'll like it.
No, it's a great flick, and The Sandman will get no love. Here's another bias.
Because he's Jewish?
No, comics.
Oh.
Comics don't get any love. Eddie Murphy.
Awkwafina was also shut out.
Awkwafina, The Sandman, and Eddie Murphy, all shut out, and they all deserved nominations, and I'm sorry, Scarlett Johansson lovers out there, too. They should have just said, one or the other, and it probably shouldn't have been Best Supporting Actor, because I saw her in
Did she Marriage Story?
Nah, you know, I gotta see it. Sergio's making me see it.
Yeah, you should watch it.
I have to watch it. I'm not a big fan of the director, and I have a whole thing about Netflix movies. Don't get me started.
But you watched Irishman, which got a lot of love.
I saw it on the big screen.
Oh, okay.
But the contradiction that you could have nailed me on as a good cross examination. But Ben, you
what watched, about Dolomite?
There
is my
you
name.
Go. I went over to my friend's house who has the big TV, and we watched it on his big TV. I've since seen it twice. I loved it so much. But they have this thing against comics. It's really weird. Jim Carrey has always gotten screwed. And when a comic does a serious movie, they get screwed. The Sandman got screwed, and
Robin Williams. Did he ever win?
Yes, he did. He won for
Dead Poets Society.
Whoa, very good.
Was it for Good Will Hunting?
Correct. Robert Mueller weighs in. Robert Mueller thinks I know. Candace Castillo, our next guest, will probably know the answer to that. She's a big movie buff. She's shaking her head. I don't know. But I know she agrees with me that Adam Sandler deserved to be nominated for Best Actor this year. She's nodding her head.
Even though I'm like ripping on the Oscars, I'm going to watch them.
Oh, yeah. No, let's get that straight. I love awards shows.
I know. Yeah. I like watching to see what people wear. That's mostly what I watch.
Do you watch the Grammys as well?
I used to as a kid, and then the older I got, I felt like I don't listen to any of this music, most of it. When I was younger, like in the coming of age in the 80s, it was awesome. Like Michael Jackson, you know, it was just fun. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe I'm just too old. I do try to like see what people are wearing the next day, but I don't sit through it. I watch the Golden Globes and the Oscars are my main shows now award shows that I watch now.
Definitely. Grammys are huge in our house. I don't know any of the music, but love the costumes and everything and all the glamour and the glitz. And for 10 trivia points before I let you go, the great Michael Jackson performance in the Grammys in 1985, I want to say, what song did he sing backed by a big choir? Ramana Hussein.
Billie Jean?
No, negatory. Candace, I'm looking at you. Do you know? You want me to sing it? No, you don't. Man in the Mirror.
Oh, no. It can't be 85. Man in the Mirror came out like 90 or something. Late 80s. It was not 85. Because I remember
80s.
How old I was. Yeah.
87. Look at Candace Castillo. Knows her stuff. We're going to bring her on to talk about Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and impeachment, but she weighs in 87. All right, could have been 87.
And then we can complain about Stephen King next week.
Oh, my God, Stephen King. I love you, Stephen King, but stay off of Twitter. All right, I told you. Any person over the age of 60 should be prevented from being...
Well, it used to be 50. You changed. You went up.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, all right, 50. Make it 50. Then get Trump off too. All right, Ramana, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
I got
Candace Castillo on deck. Can't wait to bring her on. We'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffemanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you, people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
It's Chicagoland's adult entertainment playground. It's the world-famous Admiral Theater, 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. The Admiral is homegrown from Chicago, and it's the most conveniently located club in all of the city. 15 minutes from the O'Hare Airport in downtown Chicago Loop. Voted Chicago's best strip club, the Admiral has showgirls galore and a variety of adult entertainment shows. The world-famous Admiral Theater, open every day from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m., 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. For events, showtime, and other information, visit AdmiralX.com. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter.
How did you go from sharing stories over the years to deciding to write a book?
Good question, Mayor. Good question.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.